Welcome to Open Studio, a program where we put a spotlight on the arts, artists, and issues in the cultural community. I'm Tom Musgrave. Well, after a couple of weeks off for the WUKY Fun Drive, it's great to be back. And it's a new month. We'll be dedicating each segment in April to literature in honor of National Poetry Month, as well as Kentucky Writers' Day, which is April 24th. To kick off this series, we have a world-class guest to help us get started. Ada Limón was the 24th United States Poet Laureate, serving from 2022 to 2025. Her most recent book, Startlement, a collection of poems spanning 20 years, was released in September of 2025. And among the praise it received was this quote, "I marvel at Ada Limón's ability to weave on the page her playfulness and wisdom. Her lyricism dances. This is poetry of a tender and compassionate human." That quote was from an American folk singer you might have heard of named Joan Baez. Her next book, titled Against Breaking on the Power of Poetry, releases this month, in fact on April 7th, so it's just a matter of days away. I'm excited to welcome the 24th U.S. Poet Laureate Ada Limón to the program. So welcome, Ada.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to hear your voice again.
Thank you. I want to circle back quickly to Joan Baez, because when I saw that quote, that was at the very top of the webpage of reviews. All the reviews were great, but I understand why that one was at the top. Have you met, and if how long have you known she was a fan of your work?
You know, I met Joan Baez about a year ago, and I have always been a massive fan of Joan Baez. I grew up singing her songs, listening to her covers of songs. And so I was a little speechless when I met her. I was at a lunch and she introduced herself and said her full name. And I said, "Oh, yes, I know who you are." And so I was really pleased when she gave that feedback. But she had said that she had read my poems at that point, and that was about a year ago. And so I was really flabbergasted, if you will, at that news.
What was it like to find out that the feeling was mutual about her feelings about your own work?
I mean, I just didn't believe it, to be honest. I find sometimes when you meet your heroes and if they tell you they've known you at all, it seems surreal. So I think I'm still in denial.
Well, it's, I imagine it came as high praise.
Very much so. Very much so.
I'd like to talk now about your time in Kentucky, because I think it's important to remind our listeners that we had you at one point as part of our literary landscape here. The late poet Jim Wayne Miller called Kentucky a writerly state. And in that spirit, I'd like to ask you what kind of writing community you found here while you were in Kentucky.
Yeah, I was in Kentucky for 14 years in Lexington, and I always thought it was a really marvelous writing community. There were so many people that were writing and gathering and supporting one another. And if you had ever been out to any of the literary events, you just saw so many friendly and familiar faces. And there's a way in which everyone lifts each other up, which feels really remarkable and unique to at least Lexington. I can't speak to the greater part of Kentucky because the majority of my time was in Lexington, Kentucky, but I always felt like everyone was championing one another. And that was a really rare and special feeling.
Were there any poets or even writers of other genres that you found you gravitated toward?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think about Crystal Wilkinson, I think, who's a marvelous writer. And, you know, she writes, of course, nonfiction, fiction, and poetry. She's a triple threat. And also, I think of Silas House, who also writes in many different genres. And I think about Hannah Pittard and Andrew Millward, as well as Mariama Luckington. And I just felt like there were so many people that were writing not just about Kentucky, but about the state of the world, and so many unique and vibrant voices. So it was a really special place to be. I cherish my time there.
Do you still keep in touch with those folks?
I do. I was actually just texting with Silas the other day, as well as Mariama and Vanessa. And I feel like they're a special part of my friendship group.
Yeah, Silas had a very I think robust period as Kentucky Poet Laureate, getting out to the state parks and doing writing workshops with people who always wanted to write, but just never really sat down to concentrate on it. So he's really he's spreading the word, spreading the gospel of writing in Kentucky.
Yeah, I feel like both Silas and Crystal did a really marvelous job in that role. And I think of them as people that are not only really wonderful writers, but who are very good at promoting writing everywhere. And I think that takes a particular kind of skill, because I think many of us writers would like to be quiet and alone and making our work. And so switching into the service mode is really individual and sometimes difficult for artists. And I think both of them served so beautifully as Kentucky Poet Laureate.
Yeah. I mean, I give Crystal a lot of credit, and I think it deserves to be said. She is the only Poet Laureate who had one foot in the pandemic and one foot in the post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. So there were challenges associated with that she rose to and surpassed.
Yeah, and handled so well. And I think it was mirrored by Joy Harjo, who served as the 23rd Poet Laureate of the United States, who also had to do that and pivot to more of an online presence as opposed to an in-person presence. And I thought they both handled it beautifully.
So continuing to talk about your time in Kentucky, what did you find inspired you when you were living here?
Well, you know, for me, when I first moved to Kentucky, I knew very little about it. My husband is in the horse racing world, which is what brought us to Kentucky. And so I had a lot of time to try to figure out what my relationship was going to be with the land. And so the first thing that I discovered and the first thing that connected me to Kentucky was the natural world itself. I learned to name and identify plants and animals that were local to the area. And that felt, for me, like a doorway. And that was my initial connection. We lived way out on Todd's Road, and about 20 minutes out of town. And it was in an old tobacco weigh station. And I would go for these long walks and figure out what kind of birds and trees and plants were flourishing all around us. And it was a really special way for me to get to know not just the area, but nature itself. And I was, of course, coming from 10, 11 years in New York City. And so I have a poem in my book, Bright Dead Things, which is called Rewilding. And I think that's what I was doing, which was I was rewilding, and Kentucky was the place that I did that. And it was really important to me to know not just the area, but the specific plants and animals that made that place so special, that makes it so special.
Do you ever, for those memories, do you ever return to them for inspiration in writing that you've been working on since moving?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a big part of my life. And so I've been thinking about it quite a bit as I've moved to California, moved to my hometown, to be close to me, to my parents and to my original landscape, if you will. And for me, I feel like I'm always have a foot in the present moment, but I'm also very aware of the gratitude I have for my past and what has come before. So as I write, Kentucky is very present still in not only my poems, but in some of the prose I'm attempting.
So as we mentioned before, you served as the U.S. Poet Laureate. Can you reflect a little bit on your time in that position? What How did you grow? Was it what you expected?
You know, I was really honored to serve in that role. And as you noted, I served for 3 years. And I think that it was one of the most profound experiences of my life for many reasons. And one of them is that it taught me so much about service and surrendering to something larger, which was, what was it to not just be an advocate for your own work, but to be an advocate for poetry and to be an advocate for literature? You know, as a representative of the largest library in the world, you begin to really think about what it is to promote words, language, and what it is to communicate to each other. And so for me, the biggest thing that surprised me was that as I went on the road, it wasn't that I was bringing poetry out there, but instead it was that I got to be in rooms where people told me about their own experience with poetry and all the work that was being done in community groups, in reading groups, in book clubs, all around the nation. And it was surprisingly inspiring. I kept feeling like I would leave events refilled and refueled. And that was surprising to me.
Have you used those sort of to inform work that you continue to do, those experiences that you absorbed?
Yeah, one of the things that I think about is that when I am making work, I think about how many people are also making work. I think sometimes when you are an artist, no matter where you're writing, no matter how strong your community, there is a feeling like you're alone. You know, you have to make work alone. And now when I sit down to the desk, I think about all the people out there that are writing poems. And there's something about that that is really heartening. And I keep them with me as I write.
Yeah, writing is, I've heard it described as a lonely profession. And I'm not a poet, but I write journalistically, and even if I'm working on a freelance project, yes, I've interviewed people, but when I'm crafting that, it is alone. You don't necessarily have somebody to bounce ideas off of all the time. And but there's something liberating about that too.
Yeah, there's something about the freedom of being alive in your own mind. But then there's something courageous that comes when you start to gather all the people that are writing together.
Yes.
That this endeavor is not just yours, but everyone's.
Right. So part of your service as U.S. Poet Laureate was the Europa Clipper Project. And I know that's been well publicized, that you have work that is at this moment traveling to Jupiter, specifically the moon Europa. Mission was launched in October 2024 when you were still U.S. Poet Laureate. How did that work? Did NASA approach you or did you approach them?
We got an email. I was at the Library of Congress and we got an email from an email that was said, "Hi, this is Bert from NASA here," which I thought was hilarious because it was so casual and welcoming and also immediately felt like a scam of some sort. And but Bert is real and does exist. And he and the team of the Europa Clipper invited me to be a part of the mission and asked me if I would create an original poem that would be engraved on the side of the spacecraft that would then be launched into space and go to the second moon of Jupiter, which is called Europa, which is an icy moon that they believe has all of the ingredients for life. And so my task was to create a poem that would be like a message that would go on the side of this spacecraft to this other watery place.
And I wish I had written it down, but I read the poem, and there's one passage in there where you remind us that we too here on Earth still have mysteries to uncover, which I thought was very profound for a
thank you
for a spacecraft heading to Jupiter.
Yeah, you know, I love that you brought up that line. The line is, we too are made of wonders. And I think about that because really it's a poem that even though it's for out there, it is for us here on this planet. And every NASA scientist will tell you that this planet is the best planet, the one that we are on. And so I think that that was really helped me complete the poem was instead of thinking about it going out into space, I really thought, oh, this is a poem that is for every living thing on this earth.
It's when you were talking a moment ago about this being the favorite planet, I'm reminded of Carl Sagan saying, it's the only home we've got.
Yeah, truly, truly. Let's protect it.
Yes, yes. He was adamant about that as well. So how do you, because I think in the bingo card of being a poet, how do you approach a writing project like that? Because I can't imagine that was, you know, when you were in school, that was remotely on your trajectory. So how do you approach something like that? That is maybe a once in a lifetime commission?
You know, I was terrified. If I'm very honest, I said yes enthusiastically because I thought it was such a unique and incredible thing to be a part of. And I then panicked. And I was lucky enough to have a little bit of time. I had about 3 months, I think, to complete the poem. And we went to W.S. Merwin's home in Maui, in a town called Haiku. And W.S. Merwin was the 19th poet laureate of the United States. And his home since his death has been turned into the Merwin Conservancy, which is an incredible place to go and write. And they invite people who are interested in not just language, but also land conservation. And so I was invited with my husband to go and write. And I took the time to write the poem there. And honestly, I think 19 drafts of that poem are pretty terrible. And my husband, once I read that, you know, 18th draft, he said, you know, I think you should stop writing a NASA poem and start writing a poem that you would actually write. And that shifted everything for me. And that was when I started thinking about really that it's a poem for us here, not a poem for out there. And once that changed, and I shifted this to be a poem that was about us and all of us, every living thing, that shifted the poem, and that finally gave me a draft I could work on and revise to get to a place where I actually could live with it. and now I actually like it.
I feel like that explanation is why that line resonated with me so well, and probably other people too. Yeah. The continued reminder of the mysteries of our own home. And this is, I'm a total space geek, which is why we've gone down this sort of rabbit hole. I'm glad. Well, thank you. I want to ask one more thing about this. I've seen publicity shots of you at NASA observing the probe. Did you get to go into the clean room and see the probe as it was being assembled?
I was able to, basically there is a viewing room that's above the clean room, and I was able to view from that perspective. I was not able to enter, but I was able to view it being assembled, and then I was also invited, and that was at the NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, California, and then I was also invited to the launch itself at the Kennedy Space Center, where I viewed it from the launch center and was able to watch it take off. And it felt so bizarre and strange to see this really powerful thing be launched into space and think, there goes my poem.
Yeah, there's a piece of you on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I fibbed a moment ago. I do want to ask one more thing. It is about the physical manifestation of the poem. I thought it was mm-hmm. interesting that it is recorded in your handwriting mm-hmm. on that plate and not in some sort of font. Was that a choice that you had made or asked them to do, or is that something that they had intended to do from the outset?
You know, I'm not quite sure when they came up with the idea, but they approached me after the poem was done and said, will you write it in your own handwriting? We want to engrave it in your own handwriting. And I think that if I had known that from the beginning, it might have been more difficult to complete, because I hadn't realized, I thought maybe the poem was on a chip or something like that. I didn't mm-hmm. think it was actually going to be on the spacecraft engraved in my own handwriting. And I was so amazed by the idea, because they wanted to make it uniquely human, that it wasn't artificial intelligence, that it was human. And I also sort of loved the task, because I spent many summers practicing my handwriting with my grandma, Alame, in the desert heat of California when we were all inside staying cool in front of the fan. She would have me practice my cursive. And so the poem in some ways is written not just in my handwriting, but in the handwriting that was instructed to me by my dear grandmother.
What a wonderful tribute.
Mm-hmm.
There's a romance to it, I think. Like you said, it's not etched in a font or anything like that. It's you, clearly written by a human being.
Yeah.
And that's just, I was curious about that choice. So I'd like to shift to talk about your upcoming book, Against Breaking, on the Power of Poetry. It is a work of nonfiction. So I want to ask, what compelled you to write about poetry in this way?
Yeah, this book I'm really excited about. Comes out in just a few days. And it is a book that is the expanded version of the talk I gave at the Library of Congress for my final lecture as the Poet Laureate of the United States. So I was asked to write a talk, and when I was through, you know, Kathy Belden from Scribner came up to me and said, you know, I think this would make a beautiful book. And so we worked on making an expanded version of it, and I'm really proud of it, because I think for me, it's a book that hopefully it's for people who like poetry, but it's also for people who may feel resistant to poetry. And it feels like a gift book in many ways that you might offer someone to give a little bit of hope to if they need a little inspiration. And I can imagine many of us need a little inspiration these days.
Do you get into any sort of autobiographical exposition in it?
I do. Yeah, there's much of my life in it. A lot of that's just with my own experience with poetry, but also my experience as serving as the Poet Laureate. It includes the National Park Project called You Are Here, and includes the work of that and some experiences in those incredible parks that are really the best of the United States.
Well, it's always fascinating when artists sort of pull the curtain back on what it is they do. I mean, sometimes that is equally as fascinating as the work itself. So
I hope so.
Yeah. So I want to find out what you have planned yourself for National Poetry Month.
Yeah, quite a bit. You know, I love National Poetry Month. What I try to do is write a poem a day for the month of April, which I almost always fail at, but the attempt gives me at least some interesting drafts. So I'll begin with a reading at my local bookstore here in Sonoma, California, called Reader's Books, which is actually the bookstore that I grew up working at. I had a job there from ages 15, and then on and off until 21. And so it's a marvelous little place, and I'll be doing the launch there of Against Breaking. And then I will be at the University of Oregon giving a talk. And that'll be the release date. April 7th is the release date for the book. And the talk is on the 8th. And then I have a couple of other readings, one at Book Passage in Northern California. And then I also have a city arts lecture in San Francisco. And then on the 16th, my small town of Sonoma is presenting me with the Key to the City. And it's the Treasure Artist reception. So that'll be exciting. And then, of course, I'm on the road again to Philadelphia on the 21st. Oh, wow. And then I believe, is that the last of April? And then I'll be home. So it's going to be quite a bit of travel, but at the same time, it's some really lovely events celebrating against breaking and commemorating not only this time, but also the work I did as the Poet Laureate, which is a sweet thing to look back and think about, because like many artists, oftentimes we're just moving towards the next thing. And this was such a opportunity for me to take a deep breath and think about what that work was. And, you know, my laureateship for me was a masterclass in collaboration. I didn't do any of it alone. And so much of it was partnerships with the national parks, with NASA, with the Library of Congress, and with my dear friend Vaughn Fielder, a fellow Kentuckian. So it was really marvelous to see this book come into being.
Well, I can't imagine how you end an experience like being the U.S. Poet Laureate and just have the attitude, oh, it's time for the next thing.
Right.
I think reflection is incumbent upon that.
Yeah, I think that's important. And, you know, many of us are sort of thinking, okay, we have to move forward. But I think sometimes we need to take a moment, pause, and be grateful for the fact that as artists, we get to do this. And it's a marvelous thing to make something. And that is something we should never take for granted.
Well, a moment ago, you mentioned Vaughn Fielder. I do want to give her credit for helping set this interview up. It is, you're a busy person. and I'm glad we were able to find time to chat with each other.
I'm always going to have time for Kentucky.
Well, I want to thank former United States Poet Laureate Ada Limone for joining me today. You can learn more about her and her published work at adalimone.com. Listen to Open Studio every Friday during WUKY's Morning Edition and in the afternoon during All Things Considered. Or listen to extended segments at the Open Studio podcast, available at WUKY.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Do you have an idea for an Open Studio segment? We're always on the lookout for news and events in Central Kentucky's arts and cultural community. Email us at openstudiowuky@gmail.com or visit our Facebook page, keywords Open Studio on WUKY. Your idea may make it on the air. I'm Tom Musgrave. Thanks for listening to Open Studio on WUKY.